Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, what researchers have learned about the response to Hurricane Helene 1 year later.
And for farmers, growing crops is probably more risky now than at almost any time in the past just because the markets are not paying.
Then, an Athens Porch Fest staple on what the show means to him.
When the news comes at you quickly, NPR's Morning Edition slows it down to make sense of what matters. Stay connected to the facts with Morning Edition every weekday.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Last September's Hurricane Helene took 250 lives across the southeastern United States. Though much of northeast Georgia was spared, residents of southeast Georgia were directly in Helene's path. According to some reports, Georgia's major economic engine, agriculture, was severely impacted by the storm, losing as much as $5.5 billion. Dr. Pam Knox is an agricultural climatologist at the University of Georgia Extension. She sat down with WUGA's Emma Auer to review what researchers have discovered about Helene's impact as the one-year anniversary passes. Here's their conversation.
First of all, Helene touched down in the U.S. a year ago last week. Would you mind giving us a broad overview of where Helene's impacts were felt the most in Georgia?
Well, you know, last year we had two different tropical storms come through Georgia, and both of them came through essentially the same part of the state, although they were a little bit offset. Helene came through, made landfall on the coast of Florida, and then came on shore, came through the eastern part of the state more. And the eyes, surprisingly, went right over Athens, but most of the wind was farther to the east, so Augusta was what really got hit hardest by the wind. A number of places also got rain, as much as a foot of rain over the course of a few hours. And so that was something that caused problems as well as the wind damage.
When a foot of rain falls over a few hours, what does that do to crops?
Well, of course, the number one thing it does is erosion, because you want your soil to be loose and friable so the crops can grow on it very well. And if they don't, if it's really dry, then the water tends to run off anyway. But when you have 12 inches, you cannot get very much of that water going into the soil. Most estimates for soil are maybe a tenth of an inch an hour. So when you're getting 12 inches over just a few hours, that water has to go somewhere. And either it's going to run off into the streams or it's going to pile up in the low-lying areas and cause ponding. Of course, you know, all the soil will be saturated, which means there's no oxygen in the soil for plant roots. So if it stays there a long time, that really hurts the plants.
How did Helene affect Georgia's agriculture industry compared to other storms that we've seen?
Well, it's certainly one of the biggest we've seen in terms of agricultural impact. The initial estimates of damage were about $5.5 billion just to the agricultural industry, not to mention all the other problems that we had with the storm. I think that was later downplayed a little bit once they've gone in and seen how the crops really respond to those winds and the rain. And some of them were able to come back because it was a short-term event. Tremendous problems for cotton because a lot of the cotton was right at harvest and the winds were strong enough to blow the cotton right off the plants. Once it's on the ground, you know, it gets all dirty and you can't really harvest it very well. So that was a complete loss. Some of the peanut farmers had problems because the peanuts had already been inverted, so they were out on the surface. And when you get water on those peanuts before you can harvest them, they're more likely to get fungal diseases and things like that. So the quality of the peanuts goes down. A lot of times, the rows get shifted by the running water. And because of that, it's hard to harvest them because they're not nice and straight rows. A lot of problems from the wind to chicken coops. A lot of chicken coops, roofs were blown off, or sometimes the whole building collapse. And of course, each of those buildings can hold 100,000 chickens. And so that's a huge loss for those farmers that are growing those chickens. We have more chicken industry in North Georgia, but there's plenty across the whole state. So that was certainly a concern. We saw problems with infrastructure. A lot of bridges were out so people couldn't get around. If you're a dairy farmer, you couldn't get milk trucks in and out. You couldn't get to other parts of your farm if you had to go over a bridge, which is a problem if you've got livestock that you have to feed because you got to get the feed to them somehow. Just getting around, there were so many trees that were down. Power was out for some people for weeks. And of course, again, you know, if you need power to run your equipment, especially if you're a dairy farmer, but other kinds of equipment as well, dryers for grain or something like that, it's very difficult if you don't have power. Of course, it's a horrible way to live, too, because who wants to live without power for an extended period? And some of those folks had to do that. Some folks didn't even have water because water, of course, is linked to power. A lot of times you got to pump it out or whatever. And so all of those things were causing problems. And at the same time, communications was a problem. No internet, in some cases, no cell phone service for a while. I mean, usually the cell phone comes back pretty quick, but that all runs on power too. And so that was an issue. Even the weather observations from the National Weather Service are hardwired for power. And so when we didn't have power, we didn't have those observations either.
So subsequent studies have explored what you were just saying, which is the response to Helene in terms of communication systems and kind of the breakdown of different forms of infrastructure. Are we seeing any discoveries that might help us for the next storm?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The Georgia Foundation for Agriculture just a couple weeks ago published a survey result that they went out and surveyed 147 farmers around that part of the state and asked them what their personal experiences were with Helene and what they noted was a problem. And power was probably the single biggest thing that came up, but also infrastructure, just being able to get around and so on. So that's available on the web now. It was published the week after Labor Day. So it's pretty new and it's really interesting because nobody's really spent the time to do that before. And talking to the farmers about their own experiences and what's been important for them, I think is really important for preparing for the next one, which will come eventually, hopefully not anytime soon, but eventually we're going to have to prepare for another one, and that will really be a resource. And so for people that are interested in that, I encourage them to go and look for that.
So finally, Helene was a huge storm, one of the worst storms we've seen in decades, and I'm wondering if there is anything being left out of the narrative about Helene that you would like to see mentioned or studied more.
Well, I think it's important that Helene be a reminder that hurricanes do come across Georgia. We haven't had too many of them lately, but they do come across. We could also get a storm that comes across from the East Coast. And that was something that we really haven't seen much of in the 20th and 21st centuries. The last really big storms that came onshore at the coast were the storms in the 1890s. Well, there were several of them then. That would probably be more like a Katrina-like event for someplace like Savannah. We don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. We certainly hope it doesn't. But we have to keep in mind that it has happened in the past. And so we need to think about preparing for that. At the same time, we know that sea levels are rising, and so people along the coast are more vulnerable. And for farmers, growing crops is probably more risky now than at almost any time in the past, just because the markets are not paying for the cost of producing these crops. And so you grow a crop, and then you can't even get paid for it is a real problem. The soybean growers are really having that trouble this year because they have got a great crop of soybeans, and nobody sell it to because of tariffs. It's really frustrating. I think for farmers, they need to think about diversifying so that you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, but you're growing several different crops. So even if one of them is not marketable, you've got other sources of income as well. I think we need to rethink agricultural insurance and insurance for crops and what's the appropriate way to provide that to farmers so they actually get a chance to get their money back.
Dr. Pam Knox, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
You're welcome.
Dr. Pam Knox is an agricultural climatologist at the University of Georgia Extension. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA.
During a busy day, it can be hard to make room for even one more thing. So it's a real plus that All Things Considered from NPR News is great for multitaskers. You can confidently add being well-informed to your to-do list and know that you will get it done. Whether you're cleaning out your junk drawer on a quick drive or something else, listen to All Things Considered every weekday afternoon.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Longtime Athenians may remember the Vision Video Store that closed in 2017, though DVD rentals have been replaced by on-demand streaming. A local band going by the same name revives niche Athens nostalgia, along with a goth rock sound. Since emerging in Northeast Georgia, Vision Video has gone on to tour North America and Europe. On October 19th, the band will play Historic Athens Porch Fest. WUGA's Paige Walcott sat down with Dusty Gannon, the band's lead musician, to discuss his music and the upcoming event. Here's that conversation.
For people who aren't familiar with your band, how would you describe your sound?
We have a kind of an 80s post-punk or goth rock kind of sound to it. You know, we're sort of most directly influenced by what I would say is like early 80s, The Cure, The Sound, Joy Division, stuff like that. You know, I also grew up listening to punk and metal, so I kind of take little pieces of that to incorporate into the music and, you know, just trying not to create anything with too much intention, you know, just like letting the influences exist in their own space, as it were.
You guys are kind of a Porch mm-hmm. Fest staple, so I wanted to ask, what does playing Porch Fest mean to you?
I really love Porch Fest because I grew up in the Athens area, more or less, and it's always been, you know, a music city to me. That's like what drew me back to Athens when I left the military. So Porch Fest is a really amazing communal experience of the love that Athens has for music, and especially live performance music. And I just love that it's, you know, it's a free event. It is all about celebrating what makes Athens so special in that regard. And you can really see how much fun everybody has doing it.
So since you're pretty vocal about your anti-war activism on social media, and since you, you know, served in Afghanistan and saw active combat, what was the experience like kind of transitioning back into being a civilian?
It was pretty jarring for me because I saw the reality of what was going on over there versus the narratives that were being told to people. And I just believe that the way that we operate our military is sort of an extension of, I would say, colonialism, and sort of taking advantage of the world economically through military means. And I just don't agree with that. I don't think that we should be, you know, doing anything other than trying to help people that are in desperate need. You know, coming back from military was hard because, you know, you're sort of in this group of very, very close, like there's this very intense sense of camaraderie that you have in the military, especially, you know, in the sort of combat arms world. Like I was in the infantry, so, you know, you're with people that you might die with, you know, and you build a really, really, really strong bond with those people for better or for worse. And then one day it's kind of gone, you know, and I was fortunate that I was able to get a job, you know, being a firefighter afterwards. And that really helped me feel connected to that sensibility because I missed it like dramatically and almost immediately. I could feel it, you know. It was like there's this thing that I don't know if I'm ever going to have that thing again. So, you know, while I'm really glad that I got away from the military and got out because of ideological reasons, you know, it's very difficult for, I think, every single service member to sort of transition back to the civilian world. But even music has helped me a lot. You know, like I've made wonderful, very, very intense, lifelong friends and connections with people that you know, may not ever be as strong as that, you know, sentiment of like people you serve with overseas or whatever, in a combat zone, but like it's pretty close, you know, in a lot of ways. And that's one thing that I genuinely enjoy about this. It's like, you know, even when you're like kind of miserable, like, I mean, like just last night, like we had a great show. We played in Chicago, but we slept like just a few hours because we're driving 6 hours now to Columbus, Ohio, and you know, we're all exhausted, but it's like you get up and you still joke around and you like, and there's always like a sense of fun and whimsy and like levity in the face of like being kind of like exhausted and miserable sometimes. But yeah, it's a really good world for me to be in, and I think I thrive on this kind of environment. Yeah, so it's been great.
Recently on Instagram, you hinted that the band might be winding down. Could Porch Fest be one of the last times Athenians have the chance to see Vision Video performing live?
It could be. You know, I can't really go into all that in detail, but you know, if Vision Video ends, this would be like the last official Porch Fest performance for Vision Video. But I'm definitely not done creating music. I would be pivoting onto a next project where, you know, I would still continue to even play Vision Video songs. I am so deeply intertwined with like writing music at this point and using it to speak out for things that I believe in that I don't really know what else to do at this point. So it would probably be a very extreme disservice to myself if I stopped. But yeah, you know, I mean, as much as I don't want Vision Video to end, if it does, then there will be something else, and I'll still be at my spooky, weird little house, and we'll still be doing the show. So yeah.
Dusty Gannon founded the Athens band Vision Video, which will play historic Athens Porch Fest on October 19th at 147 Savannah Avenue at 6 p.m. Death is probably the last thing people want to talk about on a Tuesday night, but some residents of Athens seek out the opportunity to rethink what dying means to them during a monthly community event called Death Over Drafts. WUGA's Emma Auer spoke with attendees to hear why they left the bubble of everyday life to chat about the end.
There is a lot of fear around what's happening with death. There's a lot of what am I going to do, certain ways to die, and all this different. There was just a lot of fear around it. Now there's a lot less fear. As we talk about it more, it's as natural as being born.
If you were to pass away today, who would be responsible for taking over your stuff? And so I just thought about, you know, like my parents would be responsible, my family, and the average bereavement from work is 3 to 5 days, which is just not enough time.
My parents have passed a long time ago, executor of their will. I had to do all that stuff. So I've seen all the clutter and all the fights and everything that happens over petty things.
I'm a philosophy professor. One of my areas of research is bioethics, and specifically, I do a lot of work surrounding medical assistance in dying. like with most things, it involves having a discussion around people's attitudes and their hesitance and concerns that people have, which I think are justified.
I feel like, especially in the South, it's such a taboo topic nobody really wants to talk about, particularly like with my family. It's like we talk about death. I've experienced the passing of family members, but I wasn't allowed to like go to funerals until I reached a certain age. But also along with like when somebody dies, there's so much you have to worry about.
I've been talking a little bit about everything, but I had a near-death experience 3 years ago. Completely changed my life and how I look at things and how I help people.
This is something all of us are guaranteed, and I think it's important for us to think about how we want that to go, both in the process and then, of course, after we die. How we want to be remembered, how we want, you know, what we want people to do with our things, our belongings, and how we want our loved ones to be cared for. If we don't talk about death, we're never gonna get clarity on those things.
You just heard the voices of Brian Riccardi, Iris Hector, and Jeremy Davis, who attended September's Death Over Drafts event hosted by local end-of-life doula Jess Dukes. More information about October's meetup can be found at organizingdeath.com. Their voices were set over the sounds of Athens's Good Dirt Old String Band, directed by Rob Sutherland. You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. The opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. This week's show was produced by Emma Auer and Kate Regan. If you missed a portion of this broadcast, Athens News Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at WUGA.org. As always, thanks for listening and stay with WUGA throughout the week for the latest in-depth local news.